Chapter 7. Compact Yet Sprawling. There was some discussion about calling Patty and letting her know what was going on, but Ozzy and Siggy were pretty certain what she would say about them going to New York. No way. In the end, they agreed it would be best to leave her a note. It should be further noted that when Patty left for Seattle, her parting words had been, "I'll check in, but my schedule is stuffed, so if you don't hear from me often, remember that no news is good news." Ozzy and Siggy decided to keep the good news flowing by providing Patty with no news. Besides, if things went as planned, they'd be back from New York with news about Rin well before Patty returned. Using a debit card attached to her savings account, Siggy had purchased a ticket on the same outbound flight as Ozzy and a return ticket for the day after. She purchased her tickets online using her mom's profile. "We're lucky," Siggy said. "This airline lets people 15 and older fly without supervision." "I've flown by myself for years," Clark bragged. The phone in the kitchen rang. For a moment, they thought it could be the wizard asking them if they had received the package. But when Ozzy looked at the caller ID, he saw Severe Ryan. Ozzy picked up the phone and talked to his lawyer. It was a short conversation in which Ozzy said yes twice, no once, and okay four times. When he hung up, he told Siggy, "I need to go sign some things at my lawyer's office." "How are you going to explain all the little cuts you have?" Siggy asked. "I'll tell him the truth. I cut myself on a window." "Tell him about New York," Clark suggested. "People love to hear about other people's travel plans." "I don't think I'll bother him with that information."
"Should I go with you?"
Siggy asked.
"I think I'll be fine."
"Oh," she replied.
"I get it. Let me guess, you won't be walking there."
Ozzy shook his head, smiling. He ran to his room and changed into a blue t-shirt with long sleeves and black jeans. He then reluctantly put on the pair of black Doc Martens Siggy had bought him.
"I miss the days when I never had to wear shoes," he said to Clark.
"I miss the good old days where you and I didn't do anything besides hang out at the ocean and build sandcastles.
We did that just 2 weeks ago with Siggy."
"Still, you always like the things she builds better. I could do just as well if I had hands, or one of those building uniforms she wears."
"That's a swimsuit."
"I think you mean swam suit," Clark corrected Ozzy. "She's already used it a bunch of times."
Ozzy climbed down the wooden stairs and opened the side door to the garage below his room. Ozzy missed a lot of things that had been in his life. The cloaked house, days and days of being alone with nothing but books and his thoughts, his parents. But there were some parts of his new life that helped ease the pain. Siggy, Patty, warm food, and his newest form of transportation. Patty owned a few motorcycles. Some of them were big, bulky, and made for the street, but one was older and nimbler than the others. Its tires worked well on dirt and gravel and sand. Patty had been kind enough to give Ozzy permission to use it whenever he wanted, but only if he rode in places she approved and only if he wore a helmet. He was supposed to stick to the forest and land around the house. He could ride on the beach if it was empty and down to Forget-You-Nots, the convenience store at the end of the paved road by the house that sold things like milk, toilet paper, and zebra cakes. For the most part, Ozzy had always been the kind of person who tried to do as he was told, but the feel of the motorcycle at full speed was too enjoyable for him to not do more than he was allowed. So, through trial and error and some consulting of online maps, he found back roads and old cow paths that enabled him to travel to the spot he missed most. The cloaked house. It was a ride he took almost every day.
It was also something he planned to keep doing. This afternoon, however, he was heading the other direction. The lawyer's office was in town, and he knew a couple paths that would get him almost all the way there without having to drive on the paved roads or risk being seen. Ozzy had a small portable CD player with headphones that Patty had given to him. He would soar through the woods listening to Ben Folds and feeling as if he were flying. Clark enjoyed the motorcycle as well. He liked its engine, and he liked that, for the first time, Ozzy could keep up. They would race across the landscape, bird and bike competing for who could go faster and look cooler. Ozzy rolled the motorcycle out of the garage and sat on it. "You should name that thing," Clark suggested.
"Really? Like what?"
"How about slow?" Clark took off, and Ozzy kicked the bike to life. He turned his music on, then raced off the edge of the driveway and back behind the huge house. When he got to the trees, he weaved through them skillfully, a dark bit of metal speeding along in front, taunting him. There was a break in the trees, and the bike shot out into an empty field. Clark flitted around the boy's head.
"How's it feel being stuck to the ground?"
"It feels..." Clark didn't stick around to listen. He threw his wings back and shot like a bullet into the next run of trees. It took very little time to reach an old grove of pine trees huddled in a tight group a block from Main Street. The spot was not far from Ryan Sevier's law office. Ozzy turned off the bike and hid it behind the trees. He set his helmet and CD player on the bike seat.
"Stay here," Ozzy instructed Clark. "I won't be long."
"What do I do if someone tries to steal your engine?"
"Are you kidding? They'd be fools to take you on."
"Damp straight," the bird said.
"Wait, am I saying that right?"
"You're asking the wrong person."
Ozzy left the bird and bike and walked out of the old trees and over to Main Street. He walked along that for two blocks and then turned right and onto a road called Sprig. A block down, he could see the law office of Ryan Sevier squeezed between a fast food joint called the Windy Burrito and a store called Runner's High. Ozzy began to jog toward it, hoping to get the visit over with. He reached the law office and pushed open the front door. A woman he knew as Susan was sitting behind a big desk, shuffling a messy stack of papers on her desk. She had a pale face with overly groomed eyebrows. She also wore a tight linen scarf around her neck that looked as if it was cutting off the flow of blood to her head.
"Hello, Ozzy," she said.
"Hello, Susan. You got here quick."
"I'm a fast walker."
Susan looked perplexed, but not perplexed enough to question Ozzy any further. She pressed a button on her desk and then smiled.
"You can go on in," she said, as if she were granting him a wish.
Ozzy entered the office of Ryan Z. Sevier, a boring room that lacked any imagination or wonder, a room that looked like the kind of room an adult thought other adults might enjoy. Ryan was sitting behind his desk, flipping through a stack of papers. His dark hair was neatly styled, and he was in the early stages of growing a goatee. Ryan smiled, showing off his white teeth and affable personality.
"Ozzy, how nice to see you. Please sit down."
Ryan laughed like he'd told a joke.
"Sorry about the mess. Someone broke in last night and rifled through our things."
"Someone what?"
"I don't think anything was taken," Ryan said. "Probably just some kids messing around."
Ozzy was confused. "Kids who like to break in and shuffle papers?"
"Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense."
Ozzy shivered. The thought of someone breaking in brought back bad memories of what others had done to the cloaked house in the past.
"No matter," Ryan said, trying to lighten the mood. "How are you doing?"
"Good."
"Patty and Siggy are treating you well?"
"Of course."
"Good. Any plans for the weekend?
Nothing out of the ordinary.
Well, you're not an ordinary kid.
Ryan picked up a leather briefcase and opened it.
I have something for you. It arrived yesterday at my house.
Ryan pulled an old, large yellow envelope out of his briefcase.
It seems your parents had a safety deposit box at a bank in Portland, Ryan said. Someone who heard about you and your parents' deaths notified the bank. Anyhow, once some forms were filled out and requests were made, it was sent to me as your lawyer.
My parents had a lockbox? Ryan smiled.
Don't get too excited. There wasn't much in it.
Ryan opened the yellow envelope and pulled out a small piece of paper. He slid it across the desk. Written on the paper was a string of numbers, 1189-1922914-229523-121145. What is it?
Not sure, Ryan said with a shrug. It's not a phone number, and when we ran it through a number of search programs, it didn't seem to coordinate with any account or registered number anywhere. I would have just thrown it away, but that's for you to decide.
Ozzy took the paper and put it in his pocket.
Was that it? No, there's this.
Ryan handed Ozzy a photograph. The image was of his mother and father sitting on a blanket in a park. In between them was a much younger Ozzy. Seeing the picture felt like an emotional ambush. Ozzy's lungs and heart began fighting with his stomach. He grabbed the photo as if he were scared that it would disappear.
I thought you'd like that, Ryan said kindly. I'm so sorry they're gone, Ozzy. They'd be very proud of you.
Ozzy wondered how Ryan could know that.
Anything else? Ozzy asked, wanting to leave the office and study the picture somewhere private. Yes, a CD.
Ryan pulled a CD case out of the envelope. It was in a plain case with a clear plastic cover. Inside the cover was a silver disc. Written on the disc in blue marker were the words, "The Cure." Ozzy looked at it with awe. For months, he and Siggy and Rin had been looking for the formulas and cures that his parents had discovered. Now, here was someone making things simple by just handing him what he wanted.
It's a music CD, Ryan told him. I had Susan listen to it.
What kind of music?
I'm not familiar with it, Ryan admitted. I'm guessing your parents liked the band. Not sure why they would keep a copy in the bank, but I've seen stranger things. Back when they put this away, they might have thought CDs were valuable, or were going to be. Now, I'm not sure how you'll even listen to this.
I'll find a way, Ozzy said, grabbing the CD.
Great, Ryan said sincerely. Then I just need you to sign this document saying that you received the three items.
Ryan pushed a paper toward Ozzy. He handed the boy a pen and smiled. Ozzy looked the form over for a moment.
It says there are four things. The paper, the picture, the CD, and the envelope.
Ryan handed over the envelope the items had been in.
It's all yours.
Ozzy signed the paper and left the office as quickly as he could. He walked down the street like someone who'd just stolen something and needed to get away. When he got back to the motorcycle, Clark wasn't there. He whistled for the bird twice, but there was no reply. Ozzy picked up his small CD player and hopped on his bike. He switched out the Ben Folds CD for the new one. Then Ozzy took the photograph of his parents out of the envelope and slipped it into the clear cover. He put the piece of paper with the numbers on it behind the photo and closed the case. Then he slipped it all back into the envelope and put the envelope in the leather saddlebag on the side of the motorcycle.
Clark!
He called out. Only a few real birds squawked back. Ozzy turned the key and kick-started the bike. He pressed play and headed west with a head full of new thoughts, emotions, and songs.
Chapter 8. Left Behind. When Ozzy got home, Clark was already there waiting for him. The bird had left to follow a plastic bag drifting in the wind.
"It was mesmerizing," Clark said. "You don't see many plastic bags around here."
Ozzy had taken the long route home so that he could listen to the entire CD. His hope had been that there might be something hidden in the words, but that didn't seem to be the case. It was a collection of songs that made him miss his parents and that he instantly loved.
Siggy wasn't too impressed with the contents of the envelope. She saw value in the photo and the music on the CD, but the random numbers on the paper in the old envelope seemed unexplainable and unimportant.
"My mom's got a drawer full of envelopes. Would you like a few of those?"
"I just think it would have been nice for your parents to leave behind another bird," Clark complained.
"No way," Ozzy insisted. "The world couldn't handle that."
While he was gone, Siggy had packed a small bag for tomorrow's trip. They wouldn't be in New York for more than 24 hours, so they didn't need much.
"You know what bothers me?" Clark asked. "Why did Mr. Wizard only send us one ticket? Siggy had to buy ours."
Both the boy and girl looked at the bird.
"What?"
Clark asked. Ozzy patted the bird on his back.
"Sorry, Clark, but you're not coming."
"I think I am," Clark said adamantly.
"You don't understand how airports work," Siggy told him. "Metal isn't something they like."
Clark shivered.
"What a horrible place. Well then, I can fly alongside the plane," he suggested.
"There's no way you can go that far or that fast," Siggy said.
"It's all the way across the United States and tens of thousands of feet above the earth."
"She's right," Ozzy said, sounding much more sympathetic to the bird's plight than Siggy.
"We're going to be on an airplane for most of the trip. We're just going there, checking out the address, and hopefully bringing Rin back."
"You could pack me in your luggage," Clark argued. "I've always been good at being packed away."
"They inspect the luggage," Siggy informed him. "Who knows what they might think of you? You're not something people see every day."
"Don't butter me up," the bird protested.
"What if the suitcase got lost or something happened?" Siggy added. "You could end up being packed away forever."
"That does sound dark."
"Airports are notorious for losing luggage."
"They hate metal and lose people's stuff," the bird said with disgust.
"I don't know that I like airports."
"See," Ozzy said, "you'll be better off here."
"Besides, you have to hang around in case my mom comes back early," Siggy begged. "She's going to need an explanation."
"I am good with moms."
"And protecting houses," Siggy added.
"Fine," Clark conceded.
"I'll stay here and work on getting that copper mailbox down the road to notice me. Someone still needs to show that they care for metal."
"You're like the anti-airport," Ozzy said.
"Just doing my part,"
Clark chirped. He then added in a whisper,
"Of course, I'll be doing it reluctantly."
"What?" Ozzy asked.
"Nothing. Just thinking about that grocery bag."
Ozzy and Siggy left it at that.
Chapter 9. Object.
Ozzy slept on the couch in the study so that if he acted up again in his sleep, Siggy would hear. Fortunately, the night brought no further incidents. At 4 in the morning, they said goodbye to Clark, left a note for Patty in case she returned before she was scheduled, and then took the shuttle bus between Otter Rock and Portland. The ride took about 2.5 hours, and each mile they traveled came with a stronger and stronger feeling of uncertainty about what lay ahead.
"This is good, right?" Siggy asked.
I think so, Ozzy replied. I thought we were past all this crazy stuff. I guess I was thinking life would be calm for a little while longer. The last 7 years I've been alone in a quiet forest. I think I'm due for a little more uncertainty.
Ozzy watched as the miles passed by like wet streaks of green paint Mother Nature was smearing across the windows. The clouds in the sky resembled naked bits of canvas that had yet to be colored in, and when the outskirts of Portland finally came into view, the buildings and river were a beautiful distraction from the green. The structures rose up, giving the landscape sharp lines and squared off silhouettes. It was early, but the Portland airport was steadily busy, with buses and cars running everywhere. The shuttle dropped them off, and Siggy took Ozzy's hand to pull him through the crowd. They entered the ticketing area and printed out their boarding passes. Then they went directly to the security line.
"This is to keep us safe?" Ozzy asked as he looked at everyone waiting.
"Something like that. Just don't make any jokes or say anything crazy. An airport isn't a place for humor."
"I wasn't planning on telling any jokes."
"Well then, this is the place for you."
The line moved slowly, but in time they arrived at the front. A TSA agent with an unfortunate hairline asked for their boarding passes and IDs. Siggy and Ozzy stepped up to him together. Siggy gave the man her boarding pass and the passport that she had gotten when she had traveled to Paris with her mother a few years back. The TSA agent looked it over, scanned the boarding pass, and then handed her items back to her. He looked at Ozzy and held out his hand. Ozzy gave him his boarding pass and the ID he had been issued just weeks before by the state.
"Name?"
the TSA agent asked.
"Ozzy."
"What happened to your hands?"
Ozzy had on a green long-sleeved t-shirt and long trousers, but there were still some small visible scratches on his hands and a few on his face.
"I fell out the window in my bedroom," Ozzy answered, his voice sounding less steady than he had intended it to.
The TSA agent stared uncomfortably.
"Do you want to talk to my dad about it?" Siggy said. "He's already through security."
The TSA agent stared at Ozzy for what felt like a long afternoon and a short evening combined before he waved them on. Ozzy got into line behind Siggy in front of a long silver scanner. He watched her take off her shoes and place them on the conveyor belt. Ozzy did the same thing. Siggy put her bag on the conveyor belt next to her shoes. The items moved forward on the belt, while another TSA agent motioned for them to keep moving. Siggy stepped into the body scanner and held her hands above her head. A bar moved from right to left, scanning her body. Then she stepped out the other side. Having spent so many years alone and away from civilization, Ozzy still found wonder in things and places that most people had grown tired of. He liked the post office and what they did. He found the grocery store mesmerizing in its sheer selection and precise organization. But he wasn't sure yet how he felt about the airport. People were stiff and uncomfortable, and nobody appeared to be happy about where they were. Some of the TSA agents smiled, but it was the kind of smile that said, "I'm here to make things hard for you." Ozzy stepped into the weird chamber and placed his feet on the two yellow footprints.
"Face forward, arms over your head,"
a female TSA agent instructed him. He raised his arms up, and the scanner passed in front of him. As it moved, two thoughts struck Ozzy. One, his finger was burning, and two, he didn't like airports.
"Step out," the woman told him while pointing to a spot near her. "Stand there for a moment."
Ozzy stood where he was told until he was told he could go stand somewhere else. He chose to stand near Siggy, who was near the end of the conveyor belt. She was putting on her shoes and waiting for her bag.
"I've decided I don't like airports,"
Ozzy whispered. I think that makes you human. A tall TSA agent with tight curly brown hair and a stiff upper lip was standing behind the belt scanner. He held up Siggy's bag.
Is this yours?
Stiff Lip asked. Yes, Siggy replied.
I need to take a look inside.
Ozzy's shoes had made it through the scanner, and he picked them up and put them on. His head began to feel light, as if it were loosely attached to his neck, as two TSA agents whispered about Siggy's bag. The one with the stiff lip stepped back to where Ozzy and Siggy were standing.
We found this in your backpack.
There, lying lifeless in his hand, was Clark. Both Ozzy and Siggy groaned.
What is it?
Stiff Lip asked. It's a bird, Ozzy answered.
I see that, but you can't bring an object like this through security.
Why? Siggy said with force. It's just a toy.
It's not like any toy we've ever seen. We can't open it up to see if there's anything in the body, and it has a bunch of sharp points and edges and wires. I'm sorry, but it will have to stay here.
Can't we just mail it back home? Siggy asked.
You can, the agent said. Just leave us your address and we'll send it back after we've checked it over.
That's not right, Ozzy protested.
Or,
the TSA agent said with a smile,
we can detain both of you until it's properly inspected. You might miss your flight, and you'd still have to mail it home.
Ozzy stared at the bird, wondering if he should grab him and run. But as he stared, Clark winked his right eye. Nobody but Ozzy saw it. The bird winked again and subtly nodded his tiny bird head. Ozzy winked back.
Are you okay?
The agent asked.
Fine, he replied.
Good. Now you two need to move on. And don't worry, we'll get your toy back to you.
Siggy didn't want to go, but Ozzy pushed her away from the agent and out of the security area. Once they were around a corner, she spoke.
I can't believe he stowed away in my bag.
Not his finest move, I agree.
We can't just leave him.
I think we can, Ozzy said in hushed tones.
He winked at me.
What's that mean?
Well, it kind of looked like the sort of wink he gives right before he does something stupid.
The two of them walked as quickly as they could toward their gate. There was no worry of them missing their plane, but the winking bird made them both want to get as far away from security as they could. After all, Clark had a reputation, and it wasn't good.
Chapter 10. Tossing Away Greatness. The security area inside the Portland airport was busy. Ozzy and Siggy had walked off, but the TSA agent with the stiff upper lip continued to carry Clark by his talons. Stiff Lip moved over to a white cabinet near a metal table. Clark looked around cautiously. The world was upside down, which meant he needed to write some things. The gears inside his head began to plot his escape. However, before those gears had time to get moving, Stiff Lip surprised him by grabbing him tightly around the middle, pinning his wings up against his metal body. Then, without any hesitation, Stiff Lip wrapped a piece of wide yellow tape around Clark. In a moment, the poor bird looked like a tiny, jaundiced mummy. His head and beak were uncovered, and his talons stuck out at the bottom, but the rest of him was completely confined by the sticky yellow tape. Stiff Lip held the bird tightly. Clark was in the mood to peck and kick, but he kept his beak and feet to himself. There would only be one chance of getting out, and that was if he played dead and waited for someone to unwrap him. Stiff Lip went directly to an office located on the south side of the security area. He rapped confidently on the frame of an already open door. A frustrated-sounding woman answered the knock.
Come in,
she said.
Come in!
Stiff Lip stepped in. Sitting behind a wooden desk in the corner of the room was his supervisor, a woman with the last name of Wicks. Wicks was a human being, which meant that the chances were good she possessed a first name, but nobody ever called her by anything but Wicks. And since Stiff Lip didn't want to be a nobody, he followed suit. He cleared his throat and said,
Wicks.
She looked up from her work, showing off her wide-set eyes, small nose, and big mouth. Wicks had been working at the airport for 15 years, and for the most part, she was well-respected. She was known for having a cool head and being able to talk down anyone who was on the verge of disturbing the peace. Unfortunately for Stiff Lip, 10 minutes earlier, Wicks had received some very bad news about a very bad investment, the kind of news that meant she had lost a lot of money. She was also suffering through a massive toothache that her dentist couldn't fix until the next day.
What is it?
Wicks asked in a huff.
Sorry to bother, but I wanted to show you something.
Wicks sighed and sat up in her chair. She rubbed the right side of her jaw and looked at Stiff Lip.
A passenger came through security with this.
He handed Wicks the mummified Clark. She took it from him, looking more bothered than pleased.
What is it, a toy bird?
It's unusual, and its claws are sharp.
Really? She snipped. Do you think we should stop and stare at everything unusual we find? Last year, a woman came through security with a doll she'd made from a tennis racket. She claimed that racket was her child and she wanted it to have its own seat on her flight. That was unusual. This here, Wicks shook Clark in her hand, is a toy.
I thought that because its feet were pointy, Wicks stared at him, and its beak is sharp.
This is a weird toy that I didn't need to see. Have them mail it home and thank them for visiting PDX.
Stiff Lip's lip didn't look as stiff as it once had.
Actually, I sent them on their way and told them I'd send it to them after you looked at it.
He took out the address that Siggy had written down and set it on Wicks's desk. She stared at the piece of paper and winced, acting as if the address was the very thing that had caused her to lose her money and had given her a toothache.
So, you've given our team an errand? She asked. Something to mail? Now we get to take our time and budget to send this back just so you could show me a toy?
I just thought.
I'm not sure you did.
She winced.
Now go!
Semi-Stiff Lip left the office and returned to his post as quickly as he could. Wicks, on the other hand, sat at her desk feeling defeated, angry, and overwhelmed. She put Clark down on her desk and returned to what she was working on. 30 seconds later, an airport custodian named Ned came into her office to empty her trash can. As Ned collected the trash, Wicks stopped what she was doing and picked up Clark.
Don't forget this.
Wicks tossed Clark to Ned.
It would have probably gotten lost in the mail anyway.
Ned caught the bird in the trash can and then emptied the can's contents into a large black trash bag that was attached to the back of his cart. He returned the empty can to its spot by Wicks's desk and moved on down the terminal. It's not hyperbole or over-exaggeration to say that Ned's cart had never contained a more amazing piece of trash. It is also no exaggeration to say that Clark was in trouble. Chapter 11. Boarding, but not bored. The airport was a cluttered mess of too many humans with too many places to go, dragging too many suitcases and bags around. Things seemed to get more chaotic the farther Ozzy and Siggy walked down the terminal. They watched a man running, witnessed a woman crying near a vending machine, and saw a store that sold nothing but candy and neck pillows. But amidst all the bustle and bodies, things still felt sparse because the scene was lacking a metal bird. "You're sure he winked at you?" Siggy asked as they walked.
"Positive."
They reached their crowded gate and looked around for a place to sit. There were no open chairs. They opted to lean on the wall between a shoeshine station and three massage chairs while waiting for their flight to begin boarding. Siggy looked into Ozzy's eyes. "Are you nervous?"
"I'm not worried about flying," he said. "I've read enough books on aerodynamics to know how it works. I'm nervous about Clark, and your mom, and the shattered window, and Rin. Also, I hate wearing shoes, even if they're clean."
A man brushed past them, talking loudly on his phone. "I'm not too nervous about my mom," Siggy admitted. "I mean, she's in Seattle talking to rooms full of people. That's what she loves. I am nervous about Clark and my dad. They're missing, and that makes me feel like I'm missing something of myself."
"I like that," Ozzy said.
"That I feel incomplete?"
"Know that you're aware of the things that make you whole."
Siggy stopped looking at Ozzy and took a moment to glance around the turbulent terminal. "I like being aware of the good things," she said. "I like knowing how I got where I am."
"By shuttle bus."
"Funny," she said without laughing. "You think you can say dumb things like that because you have such a straight nose and nice eyes?"
"No, I say things like that because I still don't know how normal society acts."
"I can tell you that they wouldn't wear that shirt with those trousers," she said, looking Ozzy up and down. "Orange and green are not a good combination.
I'll never be good at matching."
"It does make you interesting," Siggy consoled him. "You make a lot of things interesting. I don't think I would have done anything like this before I met you."
"I'm a bad influence?"
"For sure. The worst thing I did before I met you was hide in my closet and eat a whole package of Oreos that my mom was saving for a picnic."
"Oreos are good."
"I hardly ever saw my father until you showed up. I never battled people on mountains or purchased plane tickets to New York or worried about dumb metal birds that should have listened to me and stayed home." Siggy's voice was growing loud. "Birds that may or may not be about to cause trouble." The nearby shoeshine man glanced sideways at Siggy. She lowered her voice. "The point is, you've made things interesting and made me feel even more out of place than I used to."
"I seem like someone you should avoid."
"Possibly," she agreed. "I used to try to hide the fact that my dad thought he was a wizard. I've never liked being singled out for something I have no control over. It used to be the color of my skin. Now it's because Jungle Boy lives at my house."
"I've never been in a jungle."
"Forest Boy, then."
The overhead speakers came on and announced that their flight would be boarding soon. They left their spot against the wall and walked to where the other passengers were beginning to line up. Ozzy looked over his shoulder a dozen different times, hoping to see a small black dot making its way toward them, or to hear the sound of chaos the bird was creating. But there was no dot, and no sound of trouble. The line began to move, and in no time they had boarded the plane and found their place. Ozzy had a window seat, and Siggy had managed to get the middle seat next to him. After sitting down and putting on their seatbelts, Siggy took Ozzy's hand and leaned into him to speak.
"Hey, Forest Boy, don't worry about Clark. He's done this kind of thing before. I bet he's flying back to the house right now to look for that flashlight I dropped in the ocean."
"He was pretty broken up about losing it."
They watched the other passengers board the plane and take their seats. There was every reason for them to feel nervous about what lay ahead, but as they sat side by side, that nervousness was mixed with some excitement. There were birds to worry about,
questions that still concerned them, but also the possibility of seeing the person they most wanted to see. Chapter 12. Deep Inside. For once in his life, Clark was okay with his inability to smell. Wedged between a half-eaten tuna sandwich and something wet and sticky, the small bird began to question his decision to have stowed away in Siggy's sack. The trash bag he was in jostled slightly as the cart it was attached to bumped over the tile floor of the airport terminal. Still wrapped in yellow tape, his wings pinned, he thrashed around trying to free himself. After Ned had dumped him in the bag, he'd emptied another can into the bag, and so Clark was buried in a couple inches of trash. He wiggled around, trying to see the bag's opening above. If he rolled his body one way and craned his neck the other, he could just see the top of the bag. The poor bird was about a foot below the top of the janitor's cart. Clark pushed downward with his talons and tried to thrust himself up through the trash toward the opening. His left foot pierced an empty water bottle, and the bird squawked in frustration. "Don't people know to recycle?" He kicked until the bottle came off his foot. The kick rolled him into a damp tissue. "For bird's sake, that better be water." As far as predicaments go, Clark had been through worse, but this situation had an additional element of concern. As a metal bird, he didn't require oxygen, food, or water to live, but he did require light, and the silver stripe on his back was covered with tape, which meant that time was of the essence. He needed to get out of the bag and get free of the tape so he could soak up the light he'd need to get out of the airport. He had made sure he was fully charged before he hid in Siggy's bag, but he knew that his new condition would require exertion, and that meant he would need to find a charge soon. Biting the trash above him and pushing it below him, he tried to scoot his way up to the top, but the effort was draining. It was also slow going, and this was a life or trash situation, so there was no time to waste. "Forget this," Clark said. "I'm going down." Clark twisted and rolled his body until he was facing downward. Then, using his talons, he pushed up, thrusting himself deeper into the trash. It was much easier to move down than up, and he dove quickly through the rubbish until he reached the bottom of the bag. "This should be interesting," he said to himself. Twisting until his talons were touching the bottom of the bag, Clark stuck his copper-tipped toes into the plastic and ripped. The result was impressive. The rip shot all the way to the top of the bag, letting all the trash, including Clark, fall out and tumble across the tile floor. People yelled and complained as the sound and smell of spilling garbage filled the airport air. One man tripped and slid across the floor screaming. Ned stopped the cart abruptly, and a woman carrying a packaged rice bowl ran into him, dropping the bowl from her hands. It burst open, sending rice, chicken, and vegetables everywhere. People tried to walk around the mess, but because the airport was so busy, some were forced to walk directly through the trash. Clark, like the rest of the rubbish, was kicked around and across the floor by rogue feet and luggage. Suitcase after suitcase rolled over him. One gigantic shoe sent him spinning like a top. Clark bounced off the wall and back across the floor, stopping only when he hit the bottom of the stalled cart. When he stopped spinning, Clark saw that the beating he was taking was also loosening up the tape wrapped around him. He rolled an inch to the right so that he could be hit straight on by the wheels of an oncoming suitcase. "Walk around the mess!" Ned yelled at everyone. "Walk around the mess!" Additional airport personnel appeared and tried to help Ned with the trash. A man with a tie shouted,
Walk to the side of the terminal! The side of the terminal!
No one obeyed. Clark was stepped on and rolled over a few more times before he came to a rest against the wall. The yellow tape on him was frayed and ripped in numerous places.
I hope this...
His words were slurred as his energy diminished, but using his last bit of strength, he flexed his wings and pushed out. The tape gave way. He stretched his wings and most of the tape pulled off. Unfortunately, a big piece was still stuck to his back, and that piece covered the silver stripe. Clark's energy was going fast. Looking around, he saw gate 23. People were in line and getting on the plane. There was no sign of Ozzy or Siggy, but the bird knew what he needed to do. A mean-looking woman wearing a fancy pink hat sitting on a nearby bench began to gather her things and stand up. Clark couldn't be sure, but she appeared to be preparing to get on Ozzy and Siggy's plane. His power was almost gone. The clever bird looked at the lady as she turned and headed toward the line. It was a long shot, but he had no other choice. Chapter 13. Bland, but not boarding. John had seen Ozzy and Siggy get onto the early morning shuttle bus. He had expected to see the boy, but for reasons unknown, the girl had joined Ozzy. John calculated the new information in his head. It was possible that Siggy was only going along to keep Ozzy company till he reached the airport. It was also possible that she had done something foolish, like deciding to travel to New York, even though she hadn't been invited. John slipped back into the trees and jogged down the road to where a beige compact car was parked. He climbed in and drove onto the highway. A couple of minutes later, he had caught up to the shuttle bus and was keeping a good distance behind it. Ozzy and Siggy were on their way to the airport, and he wanted to make sure they made it there. He was a thorough thug with an excellent dirty work ethic. The shuttle bus traveled to the Portland airport without any incident or problem, and John had followed without being detected. He parked his car in short-term parking and strode casually into the airport. He'd purchased a ticket for a flight he wouldn't be taking, but the ticket allowed him to get past security and go directly to gate 23. Once there, he took a seat on a bench near a drinking fountain. The spot was perfect, providing him with a good view of anyone coming into the gate area. John only had to wait a few minutes before he spotted Ozzy and his foolish, uninvited traveling companion. Once Ozzy and Siggy were on the plane, John stood up. He considered sticking around a little longer, but the sound of a commotion in the terminal bothered him. Someone was hollering about something, and John never liked to hang around anywhere there was trouble unless he was the one causing it. He was a professional who always finished his jobs in the most efficient way. He had no patience for people who made mistakes. The bland man left the gate and walked down the terminal. There was trash littered all over the floor and people scurrying around to either clean it up or avoid it. John walked straight through the debris, stepping on garbage as he worked his way toward the airport exit. His mind was already switching from the job he had just finished and beginning to wonder when the next one would arrive. John liked downtime, but he also liked having a purpose. He had grown up poor, and he knew what it was like to have nothing. Now, Ray paid him obscene amounts of money to do things that came easily to him. When he reached his car, before he drove out of the parking garage, John texted the man who had gone to all the trouble to get Ozzy to New York. Chapter 14. The Sun Rises Slowly. The plane was close to full, The aisle was full of people shoving their bags into the overhead bins and shuffling to their seats. Ozzy and Siggy had tried not to worry, but their thoughts were on what awaited them in New York and Clark's current condition and whereabouts.
"He's okay," Siggy said. "Think about it. At the very worst, they'll mail him back to us. I'm sure he'll enjoy being mail."
"It feels wrong to fly off."
"He always does."
Siggy wasn't being mean. She was making a point. Clark had flown off countless times without letting Ozzy know where he was going. Just yesterday, he had flown away from the motorcycle to follow a plastic bag. The two of them watched the last three passengers get on the plane and come down the aisle. The first two weren't terribly interesting, but the very last passenger on was an older woman who instantly caught their attention. The woman was wearing a pink wool blazer and had broad shoulders and an unhappy face. She also had on a stiff pink hat shaped like a pill with a brim. It was unusual enough to see someone wearing a hat like that, but it was even more unusual to see Clark stuck to the top of it, frozen in an unflattering pose. His head and wings were bent at strange angles, and his talons were twisted. Ozzy and Siggy let their jaws drop. As the pink woman walked down the aisle, a flight attendant complimented her on her lid.
"What a beautiful hat," the flight attendant said. "So unusual."
The woman didn't like the compliment.
"I suppose having the decency to dress well is unusual these days."
Everyone she passed stared at her head. It's not every day you see a grown woman wearing a hat with a strangely positioned metal bird taped to it. Ozzy and Siggy were so shocked they were unable to close their mouths. The woman walked closer and closer. They stared in awe as she arrived at their row and stopped. She looked at the empty aisle seat next to Siggy and then looked at Ozzy by the window. She sniffed in an elegant and passive-aggressive way.
"Seated next to children," she mumbled. "I should be in first class."
With another sniff, she reluctantly sat down. The two children stared at the top of her hat. Clark was staring upward, and it was easy to see the yellow tape stuck to his back that kept him in place. To most of the passengers, the hat looked like something an unusual but creative person might have made from odds and ends at home. But to Ozzy and Siggy, it looked like Clark was up to something. The woman tucked her purse under her seat and put on her seatbelt. Ozzy looked at Siggy and shrugged.
"Is he crazy?"
Siggy whispered into Ozzy's ear.
"I don't know what he was planning,"
Ozzy whispered back,
"but he could be out of power."
"How can she not know he's up there?"
They stopped whispering to turn to look at the woman again.
"Do you mind?" the woman asked. "And knock off the whispering. It's very rude."
Ozzy and Siggy looked away and kept quiet. With everyone on board, the crew prepared for takeoff. The woman with the hat reached up and pressed the call button above her. As it dinged, one of the flight attendants came down the aisle to see what she wanted.
"I need to get up to stow my hat," the woman said. "My head feels warm."
"You need to stay seated. We're taxiing. Let me stow it for you."
The woman grumbled something and then took off her hat. Without looking at it, she handed it to the attendant. The flight attendant opened an overhead bin and carefully placed the hat inside.
"I hope you didn't crush it," the woman scolded.
"Not at all," the attendant said. "Your lovely bird is safe and sound."
The pink woman looked confused as the flight attendant returned to her seat and the plane rolled closer to the runway. The woman turned in her seat and stared at Ozzy and Siggy.
"Did that woman say bird?"
"That's what kids call hats,"
Ozzy lied. The woman swore in an inelegant and snobby way.
Just like kids to go changing perfectly acceptable words. I'm too old for this. If first class wasn't sold out, I'd be up there now.
I wish you were, Siggy said. Thinking the girl was agreeing with her, the woman said,
Thank you.
She then turned her gaze away from Ozzy and Siggy and scowled in the other direction.
Ozzy wanted to whisper something to Siggy, but he was too polite. His hope had been to snatch Clark from the hat during the plane ride, but now his bird was caged up above them. Siggy leaned in closer to whisper to Ozzy, but the pink woman turned her head quickly and gave her the stink eye. The plane took off, reached its cruising altitude, and flew east. The flight attendants passed out snacks and drinks. The captain said a few standard things over the intercom, and the now hatless woman next to them fell asleep and began snoring. Ozzy watched other passengers get up from their seats and use the bathroom or retrieve items from the overhead bins. An idea struck him.
I'm going to use the bathroom,
he whispered to Siggy.
Congratulations.
Ozzy pointed to the woman sitting on the other side of Siggy.
Should we wake her up?
The hatless, snoring woman mumbled something in her sleep.
I'm sure she'd love that.
Ozzy reached across Siggy and tapped the woman on her broad right shoulder. She didn't respond. He tapped her harder. Still nothing. He tapped her hardest while saying, Excuse me. The woman turned her head and gave Ozzy two stink eyes.
Sorry, Ozzy apologized, but I need to use the bathroom.
The woman huffed and moaned. She was not pleased about being woken up. Still, she reluctantly stood so Siggy could move and Ozzy could get out.
Next time you might have the courtesy to wear a travel diaper like I do.
Both Ozzy and Siggy grimaced. Leaving Siggy alone with the woman and her travel diaper, Ozzy walked down the aisle to the back of the plane. He didn't need to use the bathroom, but he did need to play the part. He stood inside the tiny lavatory for a minute or two and then came back down the aisle. Siggy and the woman were back in their seats, facing forward. Ozzy stopped just before his row and reached up to open the bin. The overhead compartment opened to reveal the woman's ugly hat with Clark resting on top of it. Glancing around casually, he saw that nobody seemed the least bit interested in what he was doing. Ozzy reached up and wrapped his hand around the bird. With a soft tug, he pulled Clark off the hat. Then, as calmly and discreetly as he could, he brought his hand down and slipped the bird into his right front pocket. Ozzy snapped the overhead bin shut and stepped up to his row. The hatless, heartless, but not diaperless woman had already fallen back asleep.
Excuse me, he said, while slightly shaking the headrest on her seat.
Ugh, you again.
Grumbling, the woman got up and let him in.
Youth, she said with disdain.
Once Ozzy was seated, the pink woman decided she needed to complain to the flight attendant about something and walked down the aisle, leaving Ozzy and Siggy alone.
How is the bathroom?
Small, Ozzy whispered. I got Clark. He's in my pocket.
Siggy smiled.
So now all we have to worry about is everything else.
Like sitting next to someone wearing a diaper?
Siggy didn't answer because the woman was back.
Apparently there are no empty seats on this flight, she said as she reluctantly sat down. I guess I'm stuck here. If you've had enough jumping around, don't bother me again.
Neither of us were jumping, Siggy said firmly.
Who knows what you call things these days?
The woman shut her eyes and went back to snoring. Knowing that Clark was safe made the remainder of the flight much more enjoyable.
They flew through the sky at 35,000 feet and stared out the window. In the distance, they could see the morning sun shining above a thick blanket of clouds. Ozzy and Siggy shared headphones and listened to the CD he had gotten from his parents. The music was an escape from the hum and buzz of the plane's engines. When the plane landed, the hatless woman told a man standing in the aisle to get her hat. The man retrieved the hat, but he was surprised to see that there was no longer a metal bird attached to it. He, along with many of the other passengers, had witnessed the odd hat being stowed away by the attendant. He checked around in the bin to see if it had fallen off.
"Where's the bird?" the man asked as he handed the hat to her.
"It's called a hat," she insisted.
"Right," he said, looking confused. "But what about the bird that was on top of it?"
The now hatted woman looked bothered.
"I think you've had too much to drink."
Nobody asked her any more questions about her hat. Eventually, the plane door opened and everyone got off. Ozzy stepped off the jetway and into the busy airport with a sense of awe. It had been years since he had been in New York. He had been 7 and his parents had still been alive. His life had been full of darkness and confusion since then. He had been frightened, lonely, and lost. Hiring a wizard had helped, but it had also come with some hard truths. The realization that his parents were gone was not a happy ending. The loneliness still lingered, but there were good moments as well. Clark, Siggy, motorcycles. But it felt like he hadn't been complete since the day before his parents had been taken and the life they'd once had in New York.
"You okay?" Siggy asked.
Ozzy's finger buzzed.
"I hope so."
They walked away from the gate holding hands and were swept up in a wide stream of people heading for the exits. Chapter 15. The Man in Charge. Ray walked swiftly, keeping his eyes on the boy and girl as they walked through the airport. For the most part, things had gone as planned. Getting Ozzy to New York had been simple. Send someone a plane ticket and an address, and voila, they appear. The addition of the girl didn't please Ray, but her presence wasn't something he couldn't overcome. Ray kept his distance from Ozzy and Siggy, being careful not to spook or lose them. They continued through the terminal and down the escalators, completely unaware someone was watching them. Ozzy looked remarkably similar to his father and mother. The boy's appearance almost made Ray feel sentimental. Almost. Ray Dench had known Emmett and Mia Toffey very well. Ray's father had funded their first experiments, and Ray himself had been the money behind the creation of the discipline serum, quite possibly the greatest discovery any living scientist had ever found. The serum was the power to control one's will, and the ultimate power to control the will of others if needed. Soon after Ozzy's parents had created the formula, they were awakened to the ugly realization of what Ray wanted to use it for. Without notice, Emmett and Mia had packed up everything they owned and moved to Oregon with Ozzy. They were hoping to hide away, but with the help of his most trusted partner, Charles Plankdorf, Ray had found them and kidnapped the doctors. In doing so, they'd left Ozzy for dead. But science demands sacrifice, and Ozzy's demise was a sacrifice that Ray and Charles had been willing to make. They had taken Ozzy's parents to a hidden compound, where they tried for years to get them to recreate what they had once discovered. But Emmett and Mia were unwilling to cooperate, and after years of failure and disappointment, Ray had done away with them. And with their deaths, his dream of having control over all others who walked the earth was shattered. He had believed that Emmett's and Mia's child had died in the forest years ago.
which is why he was taken by surprise when the boy had turned up 4 months before in Charles's New Mexico office, asking questions about his parents, accompanied by Siggy and a man who claimed to be a wizard. When Ozzy had told Charles that he had a tape from his parents, Charles had called Ray, and the race to get the tape began. But in the end, the tape had been destroyed, and Charles wound up dead. Ray was no closer to the prize he so desperately deserved. There was some hope, however. Knowing that Ozzy was alive, Ray had sent John to fetch him. It's a job Ray would have done himself, but as he had grown older, he found it difficult to venture out from where he lived. There were few people in the world wealthier than Ray, but leaving New York was something he couldn't do any longer. He ruled his massive empire from a penthouse apartment in the heart of the city. He had many companies and interests, but the Harkin Company had been the one that had paid for the Toffees to discover the formula, and it was the Harkin Company that had also failed to get it back. Charles had run the company, and now Charles was gone. It was time for Ray to step in. Because according to Ray, when you want something done right, you have to hurt and manipulate the sources yourself. He watched Ozzy and Siggy as they left the airport and got in line for a taxi. Ray walked out behind them and climbed into an idling black town car waiting for him at the curb.
"Follow them once they get a taxi," Ray told his driver.
"Of course, sir."
Ray breathed calmly. He had dealt with powerful people all around the world. Two kids didn't concern him in the least. There were a couple things he was curious about, however, and those things were the mysterious and destructive bird and the interfering wizard. He believed that the bird was most likely the fabled creation Emmett had made many years ago. He'd never set eyes on the invention, but he knew it had been a passion project for Emmett. As for the wizard, Ray didn't believe. It was obvious that, whoever he was misguided and needed professional help.
"A destructive bird and someone professing to be a wizard. I'm going to enjoy this."
"Excuse me, sir?" the driver asked.
"Ignore me, Gelt," Ray said. "I'm talking to myself again."
Ray watched out the nearly opaque side window as Ozzy and Siggy moved slowly forward in the line of people who were waiting for taxis. He smoothed his dark red hair back with his small hands. After years of failure and dead ends with the serum, something was finally happening. Charles's death wouldn't be for nothing. His demise had provided Ray with one of the most promising leads.
"Ozzy Toffee," he said with a hushed reverence. "Who knew I would ever see you again? And to think you have the mark."
Ozzy and Siggy got into their taxi, and Ray followed. Chapter 16. Waking the Bird. Ozzy was in awe. The size of his eyes betrayed his feelings. He held Siggy's hand as they sat in the back seat of a slow-moving taxi. New York was larger and louder than he remembered. It was a landscape of metal and stone mountains with a river of humanity flowing around the base of everything. People washed up against the structures and over the sidewalks. Cars filled the roads like futuristic icebergs, drifting slowly to their destinations. The taxi driver's name was Dane. Not only had he told the kids that, but it was printed on a large sign taped to the dashboard. He was wearing an ill-fitting toupee and chewing on a thick stick of beef jerky. Ozzy had given the driver the address from the flash drive, and now Dane was driving, honking, and swearing at other vehicles as he transported Ozzy and Siggy to their destination. The back seat of the cab was private enough for Ozzy to carefully pull Clark out of his pocket. The bird was completely still, his wings folded up against himself, his feet spread and bent. Ozzy held the bird down behind the seat so that Dane couldn't see him. Then Ozzy pulled the tape off Clark's back, exposing the silver paint stripe.
"Here," Siggy said, holding her hands down next to the bird. "Let me hold him."
Ozzy handed Clark over, and she positioned him near the side window, still out of sight of the driver. It didn't take long before the unusual configuration of metal blinked his eyes and clicked his beak. A few moments more, and the bird shivered. 30 seconds later, Clark spread his wings as Siggy held him.
"Did that actually work?" he tweeted softly. "The hat trick?"
The sounds of the city were loud enough to keep Dane from hearing the new voice.
"It worked perfectly," Siggy said.
Clark hopped up and stood on her right knee. He shook his tin tail and pawed at her leg like a cat on a carpet. After shaking his metallic head feathers, he turned and looked directly at both Ozzy and Siggy.
"Who's driving?" he asked.
Siggy pointed at the back of the driver and held her finger to her lips.
"That's Dane."
Clark bent his head to glance up over the front seat and get a better look at Dane's head.
"Right," Clark chirped quietly. "Why is he wearing a nest on his head? Is he some sort of dignitary?"
"That's a toupee," Ozzy said. "Smart man," Clark said. "Carrying around a nest for emergencies, you too should do that." The taxi came to a sudden stop, and a bird, a girl, and a boy slammed into the back of the front seat. Clark fell to the floor, and Ozzy and Siggy smashed up against each other. There were a half dozen angry honks exchanged between their taxi and another car that had cut it off. Then Dane yelled a few undignified things at the other vehicle and pressed on the gas. Ozzy and Siggy sat back and buckled up. Looking up from the floor, Clark tisked.
"What does Rin always say? Seatbelts first. I know a lot of the things he says seem, well, questionable, but that seatbelt thing makes sense."
Ozzy and Siggy didn't reply.
"Are you both still feeling good about this?" Clark tweeted quietly. "I mean, it seems pretty reckless to fly out here by yourselves and visit an address that somebody you don't know gave you."
Ozzy and Siggy remained quiet. The bird wasn't wrong. There were a number of things about what they were doing that were concerning. "But," Clark added, "I like reckless." The taxi sped on as clouds began to gather overhead and the temperature dropped 10 degrees.